Good morning, everybody. Brian Newberg here from goldenblack.com, again with my esteemed colleague, Tom Deanhart. This is our Wednesday Purdue recruiting rewind for the class of 2000, obviously a very pivotal class in the history of Purdue football. This is brought to you by Fouts Purdue Bookstores, Purdue Federal Credit Union, the Sixth Street Dive Restaurant, First Source Bank, East End Grill, and the Charters Team Remax Ability Plus. So if you're new to the show, what we're doing is every Wednesday, during what would have been the void in football season, which is no longer going to be a void, we have been kind of looking back at every Purdue football recruiting class since the year 1997. We've done 97, 98, 99, and now we're up to 2000. Obviously, a very, very important class in the modern history of Purdue football, one that really, really made possible a Rose Bowl trip right out of the chute, but then also provided so many multi-year contributors to a really, really successful era of Purdue football leading up to what I think was the best team Joe Tiller ever had, that 2003 team. So, Tom, you've obviously gone back and looked in-depth at the class of 2000. So just kind of start us off here with some of your impressions.
Yeah, star-studded. Brian, we were talking off camera, the NFL players that you know, really bore fruit out of this class. Very impressive. And as you also noted, there were other classes signed that may have been, you know, hailed more on signing day than this class, this 2000 class. But, boy, as far as production goes, you'd be hard-pressed to find many classes signed by Joe Tiller or a few other Purdue coaches, for that matter, that produced as quality of talent as this class, Brian. And the NFL draft choices, you know, Stu Schweigert, Kelly Butler, you know, Nico Koutavidis, Gilbert Gardner. I mean, it's just unreal to get four NFL players off of one recruiting class, and some other guys who dipped their toe in the NFL, so to speak, as well. Stubblefields and Stanfords of the world and whatnot. So, yeah, very impressive class. And, you know, at this point in time, Brian, you were covering the team. I was obviously a big fan reading all the coverage. You know, Tiller was going into his fourth season. Recruits had three tangible years of evidence of what his program was all about. Three bowls in a row. And again, the trip to the Outback Bowl in the 1999 season was big as well. And first game ever played in the new millennium. And again, Tiller sold it. And we saw Purdue increase the level of recruit it got to an even higher level than Tiller had seen his first three incarnations. And just for you, you know, when we talked again before we started recording about, you know, the depth of this class, Brian, and in particular, you know, some of the hidden gems, so to speak. And one guy that always intrigued me was Gilbert Gardner, part of a receiving group in this class of 2000 that drips with intrigue and produced a lot of good players.
Yeah, kind of here we are again talking about Joe Tiller and his staff's ability to evaluate and put the pieces in the right place. You know, back then they kind of had a little bit of a philosophy when they had really good overall athleticism. They tended to be more likely to put that player on defense, figuring the system offensively could make up the difference. And, you know, Purdue kind of went into that 2000 season with a little bit of a depth concern. At linebacker, Gilbert Gardner moved from wide receiver during training camp and ended up a starter on a Rose Bowl team. And that was that speaks to kind of the overall depth of this class, too, that was one of your middle-of-the-pack signees, not one of the stars of the class when you signed it. That was one of the diamond-in-the-rough types of guys. This was a guy who, you know, played tons of football at Purdue, was a really, really good player, ended up playing in the NFL for a few years. And that just kind of speaks to the depth and the volume of talent and athleticism in this class. But obviously it was the stars in this class too, that really, really mattered. You know, Stu Schweigert comes in and I don't think you go to the Rose Bowl without Stu Schweigert as a true freshman coming in and starting for you as a safety. You know, the two wide receivers, John Stanford and Taylor Stubblefield. This was a class where Purdue, for the class of 99, we talked about how Purdue, this was the point in time where they really focused on national wide receivers, thinking that they could go get the most talented players in the country at wide receiver because they threw the ball so much. Didn't necessarily work out as they thought. They ended up getting John Stanford and Taylor Stubblefield, the two guys who took Sharpies to produce record book. John Stanford, I don't know if you go to the Rose Bowl without him either. He was damn good, weighing about 138 pounds as a freshman playing in the Big Ten. He was really good, and by the time he was a senior, you know, the two-star recruit from Monrovia, Indiana, was a four- or five-star caliber player because he really became, you know, a stud. If he didn't get hurt during his senior year, if he didn't pick up that that pelvic injury, whatever specifically it was, he would have had an unbelievable senior year, and I think perhaps he might have even been drafted a lot higher than he was. Taylor Stubblefield obviously was one of the most productive wide receivers in the history of college football, and this was just a really, really, you know, star-studded class and a really deep class. You talked about Antoine Rogers and Jock Reeves, two guys that don't necessarily jump off the page at you here, who were really, really good players for Purdue. You know, Jock Reeves, you know, played in the NFL forever. He might still be playing in the NFL. I haven't checked on it lately, but just a really, really, really solid class. And there was one guy in this class who was in the crowd, as you just pointed out too, who was one of the best players of all of them. Why don't you go ahead and talk about that one?
Yeah. Yeah. This young man came to Purdue. He was just lugging a backpack around campus in the fall of 2000, Brian. He showed up living in the dorms, eating turkey tetrazzini, playing co-rec basketball. I'm talking about Nick Hardwick from Indianapolis, who walked on the team then that spring. And as we all know, a made-for-TV Hollywood story, right? Earns a starting center job eventually, becomes a stalwart in the pivot for Purdue, and becomes a very high NFL draft pick, Brian, by the San Diego Chargers. Played a number of years in the National Football League. Was as good as any pro offensive lineman Purdue has ever had. And again, this is a guy who, had he been signed, would have been part of this class. But, you know, he still found his way to the field. Was awfully impressive. And, you know, to that point, offensive line-wise, Brian, I'll tell you this, buddy. Kelly Butler, 6'8", 250 pounds, Grand Rapids, Michigan. I can't recall Purdue ever being able to sign an offensive tackle of his ilk.
Yeah,
I mean, they got him. Yeah, you can speak to this, but Purdue never was able to get an offensive lineman like this guy.
Yeah.
And this guy was special. He redshirted, played right away, and again, the type of lineman Purdue rarely gets, and they were able to reel this guy in from the state of Michigan big time.
Yeah, when you look at kind of the history of offensive line recruiting at Purdue, the best guys Purdue's gotten have had like a qualifier on them. Nick Hardwick obviously was a walk-on. Dennis yeah. Kelly and Mike Otto were two guys who were going to gray shirt. They were so physically raw. They were so, you know, unrefined as football players, or they just played different positions altogether. And Purdue looked at them as potential offensive tackles. But Kelly Butler was the one guy who was a legit big-time offensive line recruit who, at the time, Brock Spack did a great job recruiting the state of Michigan, got Stu Schweiger, got Kelly Butler. Later on, got a couple of really high-end players who didn't pan out quite as well, shall we say, Doug Van Dyke, Garrett Bouchon, a few others. Kelly Butler was kind of the prototype. He was 6'8". He came to Purdue at about 300 pounds. He moved really well for a big guy. Maybe had to grow up a little bit when he got to Purdue. By the time he was a senior, he was, you know, 325 pounds. He didn't get to his senior year. Strike that from the record. He left after his junior year, if I recall correctly. But yeah, I mean, just a glowing example of Purdue going and flat out getting a big time offensive line recruit over Michigan. Michigan wanted Kelly Butler. You know, Michigan State wanted Stu Schweiger badly. A lot of people wanted Stu Schweiger. Nebraska wanted Stu Schweiger. Notre Dame had offered. Michigan screwed it up on the front end. But a lot of people wanted Stu Schweiger. A lot of people wanted Kelly Butler. And that was an example of just the fact that back in those days, you know, Purdue could recruit against just about anybody in the Big Ten. They didn't get every guy they wanted, obviously, nor would they ever. But they got a couple of really, really high-end players in this class.
Yeah, the year before, as we noted, they swung and missed on a lot of their national recruits. Where this year, Brian, they were able to close the deal. And there's a couple quotes in the story posted that accompanies this video that mentions the fact that, yeah, you know, Brock Spack mentioned that the very fact they were able to close the deal on some of the top recruits in this class, which was a great sign of progression for the program. And, you know, Brian, one other quick guy, Joey Harris, the swift running back from Tomball, Texas. Boy, few faster players have ever worn gold and black. Brian, I think he was a prop 48, wasn't eligible his first year.
Correct.
Almost ran for 1,000 yards 1 year with pure electricity with the ball in his hands. Unfortunately for Harris, he encountered more academic issues. And I think he only played a couple years in West Lafayette, unfortunately.
Yeah, he played two seasons at Purdue. The first one was really spent kind of getting his legs back under him. But, yeah, just a brilliant talent, a brilliant physical specimen. Yeah. Big, strong, physical, really, really fast, like elite level fast. And it was a shame for him and for Purdue that, you know, he didn't get a full-term career at Purdue because of, you know, the various academic challenges he faced. Just a great kid, an absolute joy to be around. It is a shame that he didn't get to play out a full career at Purdue, because he would have had an absolutely brilliant career. Just a really, really talented player. Kevin Sumlin, if I recall correctly, did a really good job recruiting in Houston for Purdue at that time. Mm-hmm. Was able to get him, kind of shared him with the track program, I think, there for a while. And, you know, Purdue had a good thing going there for a while where, you know, when Greg Olson was on staff later on, his wife Lisa was the track coach, and there was a real synergy between the two programs, between football and track, and that helped them get some of these guys and probably helped them become better players, because Jacques Reeves was a big time sprinter. Joey Harris, performed for the track team. That probably helped keep him in tip top football shape, whatever it may be. I can't remember if Schweigert did any track or not, but yeah, Joey Harris was as talented a running back as Purdue's ever going to have, other than like Corey Sheets and, and whatnot. But a really, really impressive physical specimen, and a really good kid and a really good player.
And we got to talk about the quarterback in every class, Brian. This one, this class of 2000 included Brandon Hance. I think this kid may have been a four-star recruit in most services' eyes. Woodland Hills, California, Taft High School. 6'1", 190 pounds. Again, he was supposed to be the heir to Drew Brees, and it didn't work out, obviously, for Hance. If I remember right, he was the starter to open the 2001 season.
Yeah.
But his career just never really took flight. I can't remember all the reasons, Brian. I do remember he ended up transferring to USC, where I don't think played much at all, but a kid with so much high potential, weighted down with the expectations of following number 15, Drew Brees, and it didn't work out for Hance, unfortunately.
Yeah, but this kind of signaled Purdue being able to get a national quarterback. Brandon Hance was like a top 20 quarterback nationally, and he was from California. And, you know, Purdue went all the way to California, got a really, really highly regarded, highly recruited quarterback, which was essentially then parlaying the Drew Brees era into, you know, pretty good quarterback recruiting. Obviously, it didn't work out, but it didn't work out largely because Purdue was recruiting so well at quarterback at the time and brought in Kyle Orton right on top of him. And Kyle Orton passed him over late in the 2001 season. Brandon Hance redshirted during the 2000 year, kind of as the pre-anointed successor to Drew Brees. 2001 didn't go very well, and that was not all on Brandon Hance. That was that offensive line really, really struggled after losing all those starters. The receivers, you know, as good as Drew Brees made them look, weren't always very good at getting off the line of scrimmage against physical coverage. There were a lot of limitations on that offense around Brandon Hance. They didn't necessarily get him in a situation that set him up to succeed. I thought he did some positive things that year. He showed a lot of toughness in competing. I remember him taking like 10 sacks in Ann Arbor and still wanting to throw the ball in the last minute of the game where Purdue was getting its doors blown off. But what ended up happening was late in the year, Purdue decided, we've got this big arm freshman right behind him, Kyle Orton. We might be better suited just throwing the ball all around the yard. And that was much more Kyle Orton's strength. So I think it was the Michigan State game late in the season. Orton came in for Hance. Orton, if I recall correctly, wound up starting the Indiana game that Purdue lost in Bloomington in an absolute deluge.
Oh, yeah. A real close game.
Yeah, and then it was pouring that day. No one could tackle Antoine Randall-El, because not only was he Antoine Randall-El, but he was slippery. And the ground was slick.
Yeah.
And then between the Indiana game and the Sun Bowl that year, I think it was Washington State that year, they all run together. Hance transferred. He left the program. He transferred. Everybody was – I think people were relatively taken aback by that. What that signaled was the official start of the Kyle Orton era at Purdue. And Kyle Orton started the ball game, threw the ball about 190 times against whoever it was they were playing, Washington State. Purdue lost that game, but Obviously, that was the start of a pretty good career for Kyle Orton as well. So things didn't work out for Brandon Hance, but that was kind of a seminal moment in Purdue's quarterback lineage under Joe Tiller as well.
Yeah, Brian, that was three Sun Bowls in 4 years. You got to keep your Sun Bowls straight, buddy.
Well, if they didn't play a Washington or a Washington State every year, it would be a lot easier to keep them straight. They played Arizona State the 1 year, too. But
you're right.
I think they played Washington State twice, Washington once, right, didn't they?
No, Washington State was 2001. Washington was 2002. 2004 was Arizona State, where they lost that one late.
Oh, I thought they played one of them multiple times. My fault.
No, and then they played Washington in the Rose Bowl. So
that's
they did
right.
Play Washington.
Yeah, okay.
Now, we'll leave on this note. Sun Bowl soup, right?
Yeah.
I always like, talking about the ones who got away, and this would be our last topic. Always, coaches lament. We always talk about the ones that got away more than the ones we actually got, and there's some truth to that. People love lamenting the guys they didn't get, right? Mm-hmm. And according to my research, Brian, in this class, Purdue tried to get players like Johnny Morton, a wide receiver who went to Syracuse, Javon Witherspoon, Brian, I think it was a Fort Wayne kid, who was related to Roosevelt Barnes, went to Notre Dame.
His son.
Tony Brown, a wide receiver to Tennessee, and Carlos Perez, another wideout who went to Florida, were some of the names.
Yeah, Purdue really swung for some high-end wide receivers. This was the class where they thought they'd be able to get national guys. Johnny Morant, who you mentioned, whose son is actually a really good player now.
Man, I'm getting
old. Tells you how old I am. was one of them. He went to Syracuse. Tony Brown was another. Carlos Perez was another. Just they couldn't break through on that level of guy. And
what about Witherspoon?
They did get I'll get to him. They did get Gary Hagans, who was a pretty high profile recruit from Kansas City. He didn't necessarily work out, but they ended up with Taylor Stubblefield and they ended up with John Staniford. Again, the two guys who took Sharpies to Purdue's record books who were outstanding players for Purdue, outstanding players for Purdue, albeit skinny players. Remember, Taylor Stubblefield, they pulled him like 2 days before signing day, to the point he didn't even get to make an official visit to Purdue before he signed. He made his official visit in the spring, 2 months after he signed. I remember him sitting all by himself in Ross-Ade Stadium during a scrimmage because everybody involved in the program was scrimmaging. That's what you got right before signing day as a last-second flip. I think he was either committed to either Washington or Washington State. Greg Olson had a tie out there.
Yeah.
Knew of him, got Purdue involved with him. He wanted to come to Purdue all along. Finally, somebody went somewhere else, and they said, okay, we have a scholarship for you. You can come now. Jovan Witherspoon was an interesting case. He was a big wide receiver. Purdue recruited him, I believe, as a linebacker. He wanted to play wide receiver. So he went to Notre Dame, ended up transferring to Northwestern. I don't think he got through his first camp at Notre Dame. I think he transferred to Northwestern thereafter. I think he transferred from Northwestern to one of the MAC programs. He is Roosevelt Barnes' son, the former Purdue football and basketball player who was obviously Caleb Swanigan's guardian. And to everybody who ever said that Roosevelt Barnes steered Caleb Swanigan to Purdue because it was his alma mater, I always reminded them, Roosevelt Barnes had a history of distinctly not steering guys to his alma mater, because not only did his own son not go to Purdue, he had a number of players from his grassroots basketball days who Purdue wanted who went other places as well. So that never really held water. It was an easy accusation to throw at Purdue, an easy accusation to throw at Roosevelt Barnes. It was never based in reality. But Jovan Witherspoon was a big 6'4", 220, 220-pound, whatever it is, wide receiver who Purdue really liked it as a linebacker. I think Brock Spack was involved in recruiting him, told him all along, we think you're a linebacker. We think you can be an NFL linebacker. I think he wanted to play wide receiver. Roosevelt Barnes obviously knows people all over college football, all over college basketball. Notre Dame got involved. He signed there. If I recall correctly, I remember Texas A&M being really involved in recruiting him too. He was a pretty prominent recruit, but one Purdue just couldn't get over the top on. But they really, really would have liked to have had him. And I can't help but think that his career would have played out a little bit more smoothly had he come to Purdue instead of Notre Dame and ended up transferring around a little bit. But things worked out pretty well for him. I think he works for his dad now with his agency work. So he's been very successful in life, best I can tell. So don't feel sorry for Jovan Witherspoon.
Hey, lastly, we'll go out on this. I lied. I always love talking about John Goldsberry because he went to the same high school as Jay Cutler. I actually played with Jay Cutler, who I believe Cutler was maybe a year behind Goldsberry. Cutler was at Vanderbilt from 2002 to 2005. But again, Santa Claus, Indiana, Heritage Hills High School, way down south. Goldsberry was a nice fullback for the Boilermakers. And overall, again, Brian, this was a class awfully special. And again, few were more productive as far as producing players who not only contributed at Purdue, but were stars and had some nice careers professionally as well.
Yeah, this was a pretty – I mean, this wasn't just the star-studded type of class, just kind of defined by the Schweigerts and Gilbert Gardners and Taylor Stubblefields and John Standifords. But you had a lot of guys who contributed. John Goldsberry was certainly one of them. I mean, he came to Purdue as a linebacker. He ended up as a fullback in a one-back offense. You would think that there was nothing more redundant or nothing more superfluous than a fullback in Joe Tiller's offense, but they found ways to make him really, really valuable in short yardage. He was an elite special teams player. And he was a big part of just the substance in that program at the time, but also guys like David Owen. I mean, he wasn't an all Big Ten guy as an offensive tackle. Tyler Moore, he wasn't an all Big Ten guy as an offensive guard, but those were guys who helped you. Those were guys who were part of your program. I'm kind of going down this list here. Who else? Deontay Ferrell, another guy who, you know, wasn't ever an all Big Ten guy, but he was right there in that secondary with Jacques Reeves and Antoine Rogers as somebody who was there for 4 years, who helped you win football games. This was just a really, really good class, top to bottom. The stars obviously were the stars, but the middle of the pecking order there too was pretty solid as well. Just a really good, really impactful kind of recruiting class. It also set the table for Purdue getting a lot of really, really prominent recruits from here on out in the classes that followed as well.
Yeah, no doubt. Exactly. You need a lot of those program guys, as they say, especially those 2- and 3-star in-state kids. It's nice when guys like Goldsberry's can come to Purdue and really be foundational players, accept roles, and excel. And like you said, this class included not just the star level player, but a lot of those grinders that they gave you 3 or 4 years of contributions and good program guys who really accepted their roles.
Yeah. We didn't talk enough about Nico Koudavides. He was a stud. You know, he was a classic guy who maybe wasn't the highest recruited guy. I can't even remember what his recruiting picture looked like, but he's out at Milford Academy out in New York. Just a classic middle linebacker. Purdue had him playing outside linebacker for a while, came to its senses later in his career, flip-flopped him and Joe Odom between inside and outside. And he was a great player for Purdue. Yeah. I mean, he was a guy too who played in the NFL for quite some time, even though he wasn't the most talented player from a physical perspective. He was, if you had to like devise your prototypical linebacker, like, I think Nico Koudavides might have been it, because he was – I mean, there was a very distinct Butkus sort of sense to him. I mean, he was a terrific player. And, again, late in his career, part of the best group of linebackers Purdue will ever have in the history of the program, probably, between Landon Johnson, Gilbert Gardner, Joe Odom, and him. But those are 4 NFL linebackers you had on the same team. You couldn't even put them all on the field at the same time. I mean, that's a really good problem to have. And he was a big part of it, so – I just thought I would elaborate a little more on him because I feel like we kind of glanced over him a little bit. So I think we've covered it.
Yeah, like I said, fun class, Brian. Next week we'll look at 2001. And, you're seeing the fruits of a lot of hard labor by that Tiller staff to bring in a lot of great, great players here.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll talk to you again next Wednesday when we break down the 2001 Purdue football recruiting class. So once again, this has been your Purdue football recruiting rewind for the class of 2000. It has been brought to you by Follett's Purdue Bookstores, Purdue Federal Credit Union, Sixth Street Dive Restaurant, First Source Bank, East End Grill, and the Charters Team Remaxability Plus. So thank you everybody for watching. If you've watched this, thank you everybody for listening. If you've listened to this, and once again, for Tom Beanhart, we will talk to you again next week. Take care, everybody.